You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Let's get right into it on today's show. The Pacers beat the Phoenix Suns, really sort of a nail-biter, 109-104. That five-point finish is not really an indication of how close this game was. I mean, that's a close score, but this game was a one-possession game with, 30 seconds left, maybe even less. A couple clutch shots by Miles Turner and another clutch pass out of that to Bojan Bogdanović really kind of stilled this one for the Pacers. And really I got to start with is the fact that this was – Turner keeps doing it. He had that great game against Chicago. Then he followed up with another great game against – or not followed up, but the following week had another great game against Miami. And tonight he had a fantastic game against the Suns, 6 of 10 – one of two from three-point land, three of four from the free throw line, 16 total points, 13 rebounds. I mean, he had the favorable matchup of DeAndre Ayton, who was just, I don't think that great of a player yet. I think he will be good someday, but not yet. He took advantage of that. He kind of showed the rookie why he is a five-year player in the NBA, why Turner has the experience the rookie doesn't. And he really gave it to them, and I have to kind of, eat some of my own words I've said in the past where I've kind of said how unclutch Turner is, for example. I thought he doesn't make good decisions in the end of games, stuff like that. But tonight was a complete opposite and complete kind of change that. I almost hope it's a turning point. I mean, I said now we've seen it a couple times, it's the third time. I think we're starting to see a Miles Turner who's more confident in his and more in himself at the end of games, maybe the right way. Like, he is just starting to figure it out. Yeah, he still has those occasional bad games. I mean, he had that Boston game this year, which was terrible, I thought. But he's starting to understand what he does well and not try to push himself at the end of games to be the incredible, basically, Victor Oladipo as end of game. Victor Oladipo can pretty much push himself to do anything. He doesn't – Turner knows what player he is now and kind of settles into what he should be. A great example of that is the pass, actually, at the end of the game where he got the ball on the drive. And I think Turner 2 years ago would just try to go to the rim and create something. But he knew that if he went in, he would create – kind of draw in defenders and be able to kick it back out to Bojan and things like that. Like, just those little things that, like, he doesn't have to do it all, and he did a really good job of not relying on that. I thought defensively he was really good in terms of the way he guarded Booker at the end of that game, that last possession where he really just stuffed Booker at the rim. He was all over the place like that. It's those kind of things that he started to figure out, like, he can do. Like, he can actually defend guys on the perimeter and stay with guys, because even if he gets beat by a little bit, which Booker did beat him kind of around the edge, he's got those long arms. Like, I don't think Turner realized he blocked the shot when he blocked Booker's shot towards the end of the game. Like, I think he thought, where did I go in? Did it tip off my fingertip? Like, he didn't realize he sent that thing basically backwards. He just has that ability now, and I think it's something that we haven't seen from him yet, and we're starting to see him put together piece by piece, and now, you know, we need to see him do it a couple more times. But overall, I think it's encouraging. His end of gameplay is kind of encouraging, because frankly, I was worried when the Pacers trailed, I believe 94-92 was the score, about 5 minutes left, and they didn't have Sabonis, and I was worried, how are they going to find that offense? I mean, you even saw it at 99-99, where I was, same kind of worry was, it took Collison drawing a foul to get the to get 2 points. I was like, where are they going to find the next 2 points? The example was, they missed a shot, and Thad Young got the rebound, and he just threw up a mediocre hook shot, float, or whatever you want to call it, and banked off the back of the rim. I wasn't sure who they were going to go to. Then Collison, I give him credit, did a really good job setting up Turner. You know, I think he recognized that that he didn't need the pick to get Turner open, that Ayton was playing too far back, which Ayton's a bad defender. Tony and I hit that on our last podcast together. He noticed that and was able to get out to him. And it was just things, little things like that. Collison was really impressive, I think, too. But I think Turner just being able to step into the position and be kind of the go-to player. I mean, they ran back-to-back kind of pick-and-pops for him at the end of games, and both times they led to a three-point shot, whether by him or by a pass that set up a shot. Like, he was very good. And he continues to kind of put together the streak of, you know, when he even has like an off night, he's not terrible. Where his off nights are still like he's really effective defender and he's not making too many stupid mistakes. Like if you just kind of pull up his game logs, I mean, you know, it isn't the impressive 25 pointer. Like he hasn't any of those yet, but basically since that Houston loss in part of the Pacers, really the six games he's played in since then, and obviously they lost to the Spurs. The six games he's played in since then, it's been all double digit points. It's been, I think, three or more blocks every game, except for the Utah game on Monday. It's been, you know, six or more rebounds. You know, his better games are when he gets even more rebounds. It's taking a couple 3-point shots. I mean, you guys include the Utah game. I think that was just an anomaly because they just blew him out. But basically, it's, I mean, and then the last Utah game, it's, you know, willing to take the three a little bit, willing to you know, basically hang with guard when it's switched on them and not be kind of and just staying in and understanding he can trust almost its length to back him up at times. And really, since that Houston loss, his three-point volume has gone up. I mean, we're talking he's taken 18 threes since that moment. He has made, I think, only five of them, so he's 5 of 18 for now, which isn't great, but it's getting better, inching his way up there. I mean, if he didn't have that 0-for-3 game against Charlotte, it looks he's basically in, you isolated to four games that they won that he played really well in. He's shooting 5 of 13, which looks a little better. As you know, that's above 30%. I think it might have been close to 40. So he's doing things that, you know, aren't as frustrating as before, where we were like, why is he not shooting threes? You know, why is he not picking and popping more? Things like that, that he's either the team is becoming more comfortable with him doing it, or frankly, the Victor Oladipo injury has kind of forced the Pacers just to do this. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think McMillan, and I don't want to, you know, harp on his bad coaching as much, because I think he has done a pretty decent job considering the injuries and what's happened the past 5-6 games without Vic and without Turner, obviously, in that Friday game against the Spurs. But I think he's always been hesitant to go to Turner as an offensive threat. I think he sees the effectiveness of Victor Oladipo and just says, we're going to just ride that dude, and, you know, 7 out of 10 times Vic will close it out, win the game, and that's a really good percentage. But now he doesn't have Vic, he has to rely on other guys, the team has to rely on other players to be the guy that step up, and Turner is stepping up. He's stepping up to be that player, which is the role, as Pacers fans, we always wanted to be as a number two scorer. He's still not quite the number two scorer, but it's just the ability to step up at the end of games in some way. You know, you don't have to score 25 points, but if you, you know, make every right play in the last 2 minutes like he basically did today, that's enough to basically become the second best player on this team, because I think that spot is sort of open right now between him, Sabonis, Thad Young. I think Thad Young has kind of relinquished some of that. Because, you know, nobody at the end of games of the Pacers besides Vic has the ability to create their own shot, except for Turner in the instance where they pick and pop. Where I know it's not technically him creating his own shot, but it's a play they can go to and rely on because it's works more times than not, because it's easy to draw the pick and pop with Turner. And I like that they're starting to do that. He's starting to take advantage of it. It's just really encouraging right now, and I can't say enough positive things about Turner to make up for all the negative things I've said about him. I'm sure I'll be cursing his name 3 days from now after he makes some mistake in the Lakers game, whatever. But tonight he played really well, and you gotta give him credit for that. The other player I want to hit on is Doug McDermott, but first I want to take a quick break, and then I'll hit him. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. That's MyBookie.ag. So this time of year, well, we're getting into late football season. Obviously, you can bet anything, NBA, futures, whatever. Football, I'm into football. I like the Colts. I'm a big Colts fan. They're good. You can bet football, almost playoff time. That's kind of it. I don't know if you guys were into the Tiger Phil thing. Probably not, but that was the thing you could have bet on. But right now, I guess I would be betting on the NBA if I were you guys. It's that time of year. A lot of future bets. I don't know some of the odds right now, but I would look at future odds with the Bucks, even really the Pacers, to make the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'd look out West. There are probably some interesting odds out there considering where it's falling. I think the Warriors might be most vulnerable, but I'm not a great expert with betting, to be honest. But you know where you can bet, and that's mybookie.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON. Promo code LOCKEDON. You get a 100% match for your first $1,000 put down on your first deposit. Use the promo code LOCKEDON when you go to MyBookie. Make some of those bets. I don't have a perfect bet to give you right now, but make some kind of bet and tell me what you bet. And if you win, brag to me forever because I'm a terrible bettor. That's mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON. All right, welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. I teased this before the break, but it's Doug McDermott time. They are finally getting him into action, and we're finally starting to see the production and the what we were promised coming in to this season. So we take four of McDermott's last five games, including that Spurs game. He's got 12, 15, 21, and 21. He's shooting fantastic from three-point range in those games. We're talking a 3-for-5 game against Charlotte, 2-for-3 against Utah, and 5-of-7 tonight. The last game, he had double-digit shots. He has been probably behind, I would say, Turner and Sabonis, the third most important player in Vic's absence, stepping up offensively. I guess you got to throw Bogey on there, too. I'd say they're tied. You know, Bogey got the first couple wins on his offense, and now McDermott's getting on the back end. But he's been impressive in the sense that I think he's got to be incredibly frustrated. I mean, if I'm McDermott, I'm incredibly frustrated the way these first, really, 20 games went before the past two nights. Like, why am I not getting more setups? Why are guys not looking for me more? He's benefited a little bit from Aaron Holiday playing more minutes because Holiday probably got more time with him and has probably got more reps with McDermott because they're kind of the back end of the roster guys, and I wonder if that's helped him. Like, there's a play today where Holiday had Bojan open for three, had McDermott on his right, Bojan on his left, faked a Bojan to clear out, kind of got McDermott back to the right. And the right side, he nailed the wide open corner three. That was especially as McDermott got stuffed at the rim. That was that play. So I just can't say enough good things about McDermott, the way he's been. The coaching, the players' recognition for getting, for kind of feeding him. They're running pretty effective, actually, kind of like the way they used to run the Vic play, the screen and pick with Sabonis, where they would, or the handoff, I guess, the handoff play, where Sabonis had the screen and hands off the ball. They're running something similar to McDermott, getting him open like that. He's just been really good. I think they're sort of finding him in the right spots, and I hope this continues. Now, here's the thing that it sort of worries me is that with his Vic absence, you kind of have this vacuum of shots that are getting taken up by a combination of guys. You got Bogdan, Sabonis, and really McDermott, and you throw their own Tyre Evans there too. They're kind of sucking up all his 20 shots. Well, when you put Vic back in there, how does that kind of affect this? And hopefully, you know, Vic's absence strengthens the team. It kind of shows them that, shows him that they can do things without him, that there's other ways to score, other ways to be effective, and maybe let Vic sort of focus on becoming the end-of-game player. Because really, you know, a couple weeks ago we were talking about how he's a lonely superstar and wasn't getting any help, and he was really getting no help. But I wonder if part of that is because he kind of suffocates that. And that's not in a bad way. He's not nearly the ball hog some players are. Russell Westbrook, for example. But, you know, as a really talented player who can do a lot of things and really, frankly, you know, thinks he can do a lot of things and really is able to actually do them, it's hard not to tell Vic, just put the ball in and do something. But maybe this will give him some appreciation. He can look at this team and say, okay, you know, in my absence, they've basically gone, say, I'll throw in the Atlanta game. So they've gone 4-2 so far. I doubt he plays against the Lakers because he needs a day of practice. So let's say they go 4-3 or 5-2 in his absence. He's got to look at it and be like, well, you know what? This team is good. I make it great, but this team is good. How do I keep these guys' momentum going? How do I keep McDermott in, you know, it's not 20 points a game, McDermott. That's understandable. But how do I get McDermott 5 good threes a game? How do I get McDermott 5-7 shots a game? Do I have to drop my shots to 16 to get him that? That kind of stuff. How do I, you know, how do I make sure I can run pick and pop with Turner? How do I make sure I put Turner in spots to succeed? How do I put Bogey on him more? Like, it's things like that. And, you know, it's encouraging right now because really, I was really worried after the two losses to Charlotte and San Antonio, this team is sort of going to go like on a four fucking losing streak. It was going to be that you were going to lose the back-to-back game in Utah and Phoenix, could lose in L.A. before they got back, and it was going to look kind of like last year's team. But you can see the difference between last year's team and this year's team simply because of the way they play in Vic's absence. They were 5-2 in Vic's absence. Last year they were 0-7 in his absence. I mean, that's a huge difference, and it shows the depth of this team and some resilience and a lot of other things that I didn't think this team had before today, and they have it, and it's super duper exciting. I mean, I'm just super excited by it. I guess with McDermott, again, more than a point on him I have to say is that, you know, a lot of his ability to be effective is hot and cold with three-point games, obviously. He's just been incredible from three the past games, but it's the mid-range too. They're getting him some more long twos and actually putting him in high percent situations. You know, this was a thing I worried about early on with the Pacers taking too many long twos. They weren't converting enough. You know, there's a balance. There's a certain percentage you can shoot on two-point shots to counter out the 3 points. So, right? So, Houston and Milwaukee and teams like that are shooting 50 threes a game, let's say, or 40 to something threes a game. Basically, if we make 33% or more of them, it just as effective as making it's 50% of our twos, right? So, most 50% from the field or, you know, it's high-end. Well, the Pacers are the exception where they're a team that can shoot really well from the two-point range because they can shoot really well from open shots. that's kind of the you know, if you, the Pacers right now, so let's go on their season. Let's pull up their stats for their shooting percentage just to kind of give an example. So as a team, the Pacers are shooting 53% from two. So I think that equivalents to about 33.5% from three-point range. So you can beat teams on nights when you're doing that. I mean, you have to shoot that high. I mean, on the best nights, they're probably shooting close to 60%. So that's the difference that they have to do. And because they have a lot of, again, they have a lot of good mid-range shooters. Like McDermott is a really good mid-range shooter. It's not really a valuable shot. You'd rather take the corner three. But honestly, if you're trying to, if you don't have the offensive creativity, which I'm frankly, it's kind of some of McMillan's issue. He doesn't have this super creative offense. Your offense relies a lot on Victor Oladipo just making plays. Then that's an easy way to exploit teams. You know, you're not, to get a long two up, we need to do a little bit. You know, you set some of the screens. It's a lot of pick and roll game to get long twos. Pick and roll, handoffs, things like that, which are a lot simpler than running off ball screens and getting guys, things like that. And it does, frankly, allow the team to spend more time working on their defense, which I think that's sort of what they do, is the team doesn't really spend a ton of time on their offensive game. You know, the guys shoot threes and they kind of work on their jump shots, but I don't think they spend a lot of time on the creative plays they run. I think they spend a lot of time on defensively, how to be better in the half court D and stuff like that. And, you know, that's the balance take. That's why they're a pretty good defensive team this year. And they've been really under McMillan once he's kind of figured out the pace part of it. They've always been a good defensive team, or at least, you know, in the above average range once they figure out the offense part of it. And so it's sort of exciting right now. You know, if we look at their defensive rating right now, they are third in defensive rating, which is incredible, and only 17th in offense. But that's the balance you can kind of live with at some times. You know, if you can just be good enough on offense to win games, if they were today just good enough, then they're fine. It's just whether they can sustain that over a long period of time. But they're playing really well right now, so we'll see what happens. Worth noting, they're second in opponent's points allowed per game, which is incredible. But they got to get to 100 points, which is hard. It's hard to get to. This team struggles sometimes to get to 100 points. You know, saw it tonight. They sort of hit a wall at about 80-something. Grand's back-to-back, but hit a wall. The last thing I want to note is that they've now won three straight back-to-backs. They won the first and second game on a back-to-back for the third time this season. That is incredible, and that's like a big middle finger to the schedule gods, and that's awesome. And it's really encouraging for this team, and I'm excited by that. But at the end of the day, they need Vic back. Right now, they're just at a certain level where they can beat some of the bad teams or the Utah Jazz, because they have the Utah Jazz number, apparently. But they need Vic to get to that next level to be great. Luckily, you know, they play West Coast teams, so none of the games they lose the Lakers or the Kings will affect their playoff tiebreakers. But they need him back before they come back home, and I'm hoping he comes back this weekend. We'll see what happens. He did travel with them, which is a good sign. It means I think he's going to play September in this road trip if he's going to travel with them. But we'll see. We'll see how that knee having that knee, and if he's able to come back either by the Lakers game or the Kings game. Tony and I will be back actually tomorrow for a midweek podcast to preview the Lakers and the Kings game. So check that out. If you missed a podcast this week, go to the Locked On Pacers, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get this pod. Not SoundCloud, we don't SoundCloud, but anywhere you get this podcast, go to that site and you can check that out. And you can check out our Monday pod where we broke down the whole weekend last week. And then Tony did a podcast last night on the Jazz win for the Pacers. That's all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.